Proudly presents the Tom Hartmann Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. A wonderful end of the week. Tom Hartmann here with you. It's incredible, the stuff that's happening in the world. Michael Moore is now being subpoenaed. Well, you subpoena Karl Rove, the administration fights back. They have issued a subpoena against Michael Moore. So I guess we're going to find out who the bad guys really are. It's the first hour of our Friday program, and as always, Senator Bernie Sanders with us, the independent member from Vermont. I think of him as America's senator. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Senator Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom. Tom, I have done this show over the years in many locations. This is the first time I've ever done it on an airplane.
Okay, tell us where you are. What's going on?
Well, we just left Andrews Air Force Base. I'm with 10 members of the United States Senate. We're off to Greenland to take a look at the impact of global warming on that country and what it means for the world. So it's going to be an interesting trip.
Wow. Yeah. In fact, I was mentioning to Mike, your guy this morning, that next Wednesday, I believe it is, there's going to be a screening that Barbara Boxer is going to be moderating, I believe.
Barbara is right in the back of the plane, and maybe if things work out well, we can get her on to say a few words.
That would be marvelous. Leonardo DiCaprio has a new movie coming out called The 11th Hour. I'm in it in several places, in fact, and I'm doing opening days in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco for it, and there's going to be one in Washington next week, and they wanted to invite you, so I'm passing along that invitation.
Well, I'd love to do it. I mean, yeah, I think there is no question that global warming is a huge issue for our country, for the world. If we don't get a handle on it, it will have a disastrous impact for billions of people. That's the bad news. The good news, and there really is good news, is if we have the political will, we know how to cut greenhouse gas emissions, cut global warming, and in the process, and what I'm working with Senator Boxer about, is we can create millions of good-paying jobs. And it turns out I'm on the subcommittee that will be bringing forth some legislation. And just I happen to believe that in terms of energy conservation, energy efficiency, huge potential, moving to solar, moving to wind, moving to other sustainable technologies, we can make major breakthroughs. And if we can manufacture these new products in the United States of America, we can create a lot of jobs. So it's a great challenge, but I think we have the potential to do some really important work.
It's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders with us from an Air Force jet on the way to Greenland. And, Bernie, do you think you're going to be able to hold the phone connection throughout this hour?
We'll see. We'll play it by ear.
All righty. We'll do our very best. So what's your take on what's going on over this past week? I mean, there's been so much going on in Congress.
There is. There's so much. Let me just very briefly give people an update of some of what's going on. After years of economic inaction, Congress, as you know, has raised the minimum wage, not as high as I would like, but a new minimum wage goes into effect just a couple of days ago. Within a couple of years, it'll be at $7.25 an hour. Despite what Bush and his administration are telling us, the economy for the middle class, for working families, is not doing well. For the first time since the Depression, we have a zero net savings. For families, people are spending more money than they are making. Millions of people are working longer hours for lower wages. 5 million more Americans have sunk into poverty. So raising the minimum wage is a good start. You're going to see, Tom, in the next few weeks, a lot of discussion about our trade policy. I was just at a hearing called by Senator Dorgan of North Dakota, talking about our trade agreements with China. I think you're going to see a heightened awareness in the Congress in understanding that our current trade policies are failing the American worker. A few days ago, we passed in the Senate a Higher Education Act that will raise Pell Grants from $4,300 to $5,100 and in a few years to $5,400. The cost of college education is soaring. Many young Americans are getting out of school deeply in debt. This, again, doesn't go as far as I want, but it is for the first time in many years an understanding that we've got to do more for the families of who have college students, and it's an important step forward. Probably, although it doesn't get a whole lot of press, maybe the most significant achievement of the last 6 months has to finally been to address the crisis in Veterans Administration funding. There have been long waiting lists all over this country. The Bush administration tells us through all of their rhetoric how much they love the soldiers, how much they love the veterans, and yet when it comes to making a choice between giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires or adequately funding the VA, they have certainly chosen not to fund the VA. That is being remedied. The VA and our veterans are going to get the biggest increase they have seen in the modern history of this country. People will be reading next week about a major initiative dealing with children's health care. As I have said to you on this show many times, Tom, one of the great disgraces in this country is that we have by far the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country, close to 20%, and that is just inexcusable for a nation as wealthy as we are. 10 million children in this country don't have any health insurance at all, and of course, the former governor of Texas, George Bush, left that state with about 25% of his kids without any health insurance. There will be a major debate about whether we expand the S-CHIP program. Many of us wanted to go a lot further again, but there is some Republican support for putting $35 billion into children's health care, which would cover somewhere between 3 or 4 million children. So it's, again, a step forward. I think people are seeing on the front pages of their papers now, finally, after 6 years of total abdication of constitutional responsibility regarding oversight, you are seeing both in the Senate and in the House serious oversight and holding the Bush administration accountable. My colleague from Vermont, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has just subpoenaed Karl Rove in the House. They are going after some of the people who have a lot of information on this U.S. attorney issue. You're going to see more of that, but that's an important step forward as well.
Yeah. Senator Bernie, we're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Last week, a week ago today, in fact, the Bush administration said that they would not allow the Justice Department to pursue, or any U.S. attorney, for example, the U.S. attorney for Washington, D.C., who is given this task, to pursue any kind of proceedings that might fall under something where they claim executive privilege. For example, contempt of Congress against Alberto Gonzalez, or a lying, perjury by Gonzalez, things like this. What do you do in the Senate if you issue a subpoena and the Justice Department refuses to enforce it? What do you do?
Well, you be as aggressive as you can. I mean, this clearly will be a major constitutional struggle. It'll end up in the courts. But I think the time is long overdue to make this President of the United States understand that he is not a king, that we do not have an imperial presidency, that we live under a constitution and a rule of law, that he cannot ignore the American people or the United States Congress. You're beginning to see the Congress gearing up for that struggle.
Yeah, it certainly seems that there are some efforts underway. There is an interesting blog over at the American Prospect, the online version of the magazine, talking about the trade agreements. And Dean Baker is pointing out in his blog there, an economist, a co-director of the Center for Economics and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., that all of these trade agreements are pushing for reducing barriers on trade that have to do with labor. In other words, things that are going to whack working people. But all of them are aggressively trying to keep in place barriers to trade that protect corporate profits, things like patent and copyright protection and intellectual properties and all these kinds of things. Go ahead.
That's been the case for many, many years. This constant hawk, very worried that in China they're going to duplicate all of the DVDs and the CDs and all of that stuff. But no one seems to worry that millions of Americans are being thrown out on the streets. Companies are moving right and left to China, and not just blue-collar jobs, but white-collar jobs as well. People there are being hired at a fraction of the wages paid to American workers, resulting in the decline of the middle class. Somehow, for our administration and our trade negotiations, those seem not to be very important issues. God forbid, that corporations might lose some money. My goodness, this is an issue we've got to deal with. So the bad news is that through NAFTA, through permanent normal trade relations with China, with other trade agreements, we have sold out the middle class and working families of this country. The good news is that in this last election, we have elected a number of members to the Senate and to the House who I think are prepared to stand up and demand very fundamental changes in our trade policies.
Yeah, and that is good news. It is very good news, and hopefully we'll see a lot of movement in that direction. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. He's live on an Air Force jet flying to Greenland as we speak. We're going to try and hold the line here for the hour and take your calls, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. I'm going to drop by our blog, airamerica.com, live chat over at tomhartmann.com, and our message board as well, 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartmann, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you on Air America Radio. It's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders on a jet to Iceland along with 12 members.
Greenland.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I've been to Iceland a bunch of times. Yeah, I've never been to Greenland. I mix them up. Well, I'm glad to know that we're still connected, Bernie.
We are. We'll make this the last segment if we could.
Oh, we will? Okay. All righty. Then let's get some phone calls in here if that's all right with you. Okay, Rich in Birmingham, Alabama. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon, guys. I know that they just defeated a bill which the states would be required to have a certain amount of their energy be renewable energy. I'm wondering, why can't there be a proposal where we have like a carbon credit system where states like California can sell off their credits to states like mine in Alabama? And also, why can't there be some way to encourage people, through normal citizens like myself, I purchase wind credits to increase the demand for wind energy from states to have that. Why can we not find some way to incentivize that? Thank you. Have a great day.
Well, that's a very good question, and those are some of the directions that some of us are trying to move in taking on the coal companies and the oil companies and the automobile manufacturers and so forth and so on. We are interested in a cap-and-trade approach. We are also very interested in moving forward toward tax credits and other incentives to make it easier for people to install solar units on their rooftops or to install wind turbines as well. We're also interested in making it easier for people to retrofit their homes so that they can become more energy efficient and also provide tax credits and other incentives for people to get hybrids and other fuel efficient cars. So that is exactly the direction that many of us want to go.
And hopefully can. Kathy in Chicago, Illinois, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi. I'd like to talk to you about something I never hear anybody ever talk about, and that is the overflow of drugs that's coming into our country. I live in the southwest suburbs of Chicago, and it's gotten so bad within the last 5 years, it's not funny. I have a 15-year-old son I'm constantly worrying about between the heroin, the methamphetamine, the coke, anything. I lost a son last October to heroin overdose. And they're buying these drugs for cheap. I mean dirt cheap. Anybody that gets an allowance can afford these drugs. And then when you try to get help or rehab for them, unless you got a lot of money or a lot of insurance, no one pays attention to you. And it's got to stop. My neighborhood's in crisis here.
Well, let me tell you, what you're talking about is a huge problem all over the country. I'm not sure that people are not talking about it. I know that even...
I don't hear nothing in the debates about it ever. I watch all the debates, the YouTube debate. Nothing was brought up about the drug crisis in this country.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy.
But I can tell you that even in a small rural state like Vermont, we're dealing with heroin and other dangerous drugs, and there are people who are preying on our young people. And I think we're going to need a very comprehensive approach in terms of educating our young people and everybody about the dangers of drugs and doing the best and improving our interdiction approaches. But it is a very serious problem, no question about that.
The European Union now is freaking out about the fact that the biggest opium crop and thus the cheapest heroin in the history of Europe is coming out of Afghanistan, too.
That's right. Yep.
It's just another consequence of our failed policies over there. Julian in Grand Rapids, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Senator Charles Schumer and other senators requested that the Solicitor General appoint an independent prosecutor to investigate Attorney General Gonzalez for perjury. I'm curious, how independent is the Solicitor General from the Bush administration, and does he have the authority to appoint an independent prosecutor?
Well, I agree with Senator Schumer. I think the Attorney General has testified before the Judiciary Committee on a number of occasions, and there are those people who think he just may not be telling the truth. We had the head of the FBI, Mr. Mueller, in the other day, who seemed to have contradicted what the Attorney General was saying. So I think the call for an independent prosecutor is right, and I think we need to know whether the Attorney General of the United States of America is, in fact, perjuring himself.
Dennis in Alexandria, Virginia. We have just about a half a minute here left, Dennis.
Hi, Senator. I'd like to know why the United States government is still doing business with Halliburton when they've been proven to be fraudulent on contracts, overcharged us on millions of dollars in contracts, and now further poked a finger in our eye by moving their headquarters out of the country to Saudi Arabia.
I think that's an excellent question. I think you're going to see Congress taking a very hard look at that. The idea that you have a company which has overcharged the American people, and what I can tell you is there is going to be a look at war profiteering in general, and I think that is just long overdue. Tom, I'm going to have to get off now. Talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for being with us, Senator. Great talking with you. Senator Bernie Sanders from on a jet on the way to Greenland with a congressional delegation to check out what's going on with global warming. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll continue taking your calls on Anything Goes Friday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
6633 2270. Back to democracy. We're going to take this country back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. It's amazing. This is not vegetarian times. It is New Scientist, the British science magazine, reporting on peer-reviewed research done in Japan. They found a kilogram of beef is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions and other pollution than driving for 3 hours while leaving all the lights on in your home back home. This is incredible. They found that a kilogram of beef, 2.2 pounds of beef, leads to the emission of greenhouse gases with a warming potential equivalent to 36 kilograms. That would be, 70 some odd pounds of carbon dioxide. Because it takes so much water and so much fertilizer and so much energy and so many, tractors and transport and whatnot to grow the soybeans and wheat and whatever they feed the cattle, and then to grow the cattle. And on a kilogram of beef is responsible for the equivalent, 2.2 pounds of beef is responsible for the equivalent of the amount of carbon dioxide emitted by the average European car every 250 kilometers of driving, and burns enough energy to light a 100-watt bulb for 20 days. 2.2 pounds of beef. You want to save the environment? Do like I did when I was 17 years old, many, many years ago, and become a vegetarian. They're asking you to become a vegetarian. Are you up for it? You want to save the environment? Stop eating beef. At least according to the new science, according to the scientists. No. 1-866-303-2270, your telephone number. Mary in San Francisco. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Well, I wanted to ask the senator, but this is also a good point I just want to raise, that all these attempts on the part of the Democratic Congress, you know, increasing Pell Grants, getting funding and so forth, do not address the fundamental problem, which is that the Bush administration and the Republican Congress are pursuing an agenda of the total disenfranchisement of the American people and an establishment of a corporate oligarchy. So the fact that they're staying in the war against all advice and the job loss and the voter suppression and privatizing the military and privatizing the voting process and even the drugs, which relates to poverty and education more than anything else,
well, and also foreign policy.
This idea of just totally take the people out of the picture and there'll be a two-class system and there you are.
Yeah. So, well, it's yeah, absolutely. And for example, this is, you know, this blog that I brought up this morning of Dean Baker blogging over at Beat the Press, where he's talking about how the New York Times is arguing in favor of class-based trade agreements. And not just the New York Times. Basically, Congress right across the board, particularly the Republicans, but there's a few Democrats who have drunk the Tom Friedman Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. And the general must be laced with acid or something, I don't know, where they say, we want trade agreements that lower all barriers to trade, except for copyright protection, because, God forbid somebody would duplicate somebody's software or song, and except for a patent protection. In other words, we want all the barriers to trade that have to do with protecting labor done away with, and none of the barriers to trade that have to do with protecting corporations done away with. And it's, as you say, it's just a symptom of the increasing corporate oligarchy that is taking over the United States and the world, and it's a tragedy for all of us. It's an absolute tragedy for all of us. And we need to do something about it, which is getting active, getting political, getting out there and getting involved. And it's not enough to just vote. Bernice in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC.
Hi, hey, Tom. How are you?
Great.
I just wanted to ask Senator Sanders about the DREAM Act and its status in Congress right now. But what I also wanted to talk about was I really, really wish that more people would be listening to or watching C-SPAN to see really how much work the Democrats are doing for us. Because, you know, I hear over and over about, oh, how terrible Congress is. It's not Congress that's terrible. It's the Republicans that are blocking every single thing, practically, that the Democrats are trying.
Oh, they got together. The Republicans in Congress got together. And, I mean, this has been leaked to the press, apparently, by a disgruntled Republican. But one of the Republican congressional caucuses got together and said, I believe it was the Senate, said, we will intentionally block every single piece of Democratic legislation so that, not just because we disagree with it or ideologically we're crazy or whatever, but so that in the 2008 elections, we can claim that this Congress was a do-nothing Congress and that you shouldn't elect Democrats because when you do, they don't get anything accomplished.
Right.
And that is just the worst kind of politics.
Oh,
it's
it is.
Just absolutely wrong.
And I just think it's our responsibility that every time somebody mentions how terrible Congress is to say, stop, you know, it is not Congress that's doing this. It is the Republicans. Because even today, there were some great hearings about Iraq in the House. And there were some major fireworks, you know, but it's obvious the Democrats are pushing to get help and the Republicans are just blocking.
The Republicans are blocking it at every point. And you're absolutely right, Bernice, and thank you for the call. Keith in Seattle. Hey, Keith.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I hear that Michael Moore has been subpoenaed today by the White House.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, here he is last night telling Jay Leno the story of it.
But a lot of celebrities go to Cuba.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio has been there. Cameron Diaz.
Sure, a lot of people go. But now, what happened just an hour ago when we were seeing that?
You want me to tell what happened? In
sure,
there?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, because I haven't even told my own family this yet, so you're asking me to say this on national.
This is Michael Moore on Jay Leno's show last night.
Television.
Yeah, but it's NBC, not to make people watch it.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
I was just informed when I was back there with Jay that, the Bush administration has now issued a subpoena for me, going after me for helping these 9/11 rescue workers.
Well, no, for going to Cuba. It wasn't for helping them.
That's why I went there.
I know.
I didn't go there like Cameron Diaz to get a tan. No offense, I'm all for her tan. Right. I'm just, sailing around on a pontoon in Cuba. But that's not why I was there. I was there to help them. And now I'm going to face this further harassment from the Bush people. And aren't they busy with something else?
Yeah, and there's the issue. So, Keith.
We need to stand up for Michael Moore. This is intimidation and payback for 9/11 and to discredit single payers, But they could really, it may backfire on him, it might help Michael, but we need to stand up for Michael. He stood up.
Well, the best way to stand up for Michael, Keith, is to get five friends and go see Sicko this weekend. And if it's not playing in a theater near you, order the DVD online, over at michaelmoore.com. And organize a house party and show it to your friends. He's already, suggested that people can do that. It's just like, on a nonprofit basis, get the word out, because Sicko is a brilliant movie and it goes way beyond, frankly, healthcare. He wraps it up by talking about, are we going to be a we society or a me society, which is really the distinction between traditional liberal and progressive ideology, the we society, and traditional Republican, conservative, and libertarian society, the me society. And we've seen the me society now for 26 years, and it destroyed the we society that we had during the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And a lot of us would kind of like it back. Keith, thanks a lot. Good point and well made. Art in Winnipeg, Canada. Hey, Art.
Hey, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to call in because you had a lady on yesterday talking about socialized health care in Winnipeg or in Canada, and you kind of cut her off, and it was rightfully so. She was talking about waiting lists, and she'd mentioned something about going to a seminar.
She'd never been to Canada. She'd been to a seminar, put on by some right-wing crank group here.
Exactly. You made a really good point about waiting times in Canada and emergency surgery. I wonder how many Americans could make this claim. About 30 years ago, my father, bless his soul, he's gone now, had a heart attack while he was teaching at school. He had a massive heart attack. Within 2 hours, my father was in a hospital getting open-heart surgery. He had a triple bypass. He immediately went on income support for the school division. The whole time that my father was being cared for, he didn't pay for any of his care, of course. When my father was able to go back to work, all of his medication and everything, et cetera, was covered. It didn't cost him a dime. And the point you made about how Canadians get it right away, that's exactly what happens. Something that people need to go who attack the Canadian people need to know who attack the Canadian healthcare system with relation to waiting times is one. There's two things they don't know. First of all, they don't know that the waiting times, they just don't seem to understand this. And you tried to make the point with her yesterday, is for elective surgery, nobody wants to have bad knees, but they make decisions about who's going to get things based on the impact on people's health, not based on their people's ability to pay, which is something you've been saying, and it's the right point. Right. I wanted to tell you that's correct. The other thing, too, that's happening in Canada is on per capita, we train more nurses per capita than you do in the United States. I don't know what the numbers are on doctors. For a while in Canada, one of the problems we're having is that the provincial provinces were cutting back on training of nurses and doctors. That's starting to go up now. One of the real problems in Canada that we have is a lot of the healthcare professionals for example, a lot of them are going to your country. They're also going overseas as well. That's one of the reasons why we're having so much trouble with so many problems with the waiting list, with waiting times, is because of that. Plus, the other things, too, is that some things that could be useful to people have, like, for example, MRIs and things like that, the funding was cut. As a matter of fact, funding's only been increased back to 1980 levels.
Yeah, so you guys need to get... In other words, it's a good program and it needs some improvement. That was my point. The United States doesn't need to, and thank you, Art, for the call. The United States doesn't need to be reinventing the Canadian system. Actually, I think that there are better models out there. We need to be creating the American system that works for all of us. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
news.
And speaking of bringing things down, yesterday we had Mike Papantonio, Mr. Pap, of the famous Pap Attacks, Ring of Fire and Go Left TV on the program, talking about Go Left TV. Their goleft.tv is literally the website. And it's just this great new video. I would do it an injustice for trying to describe it in a single sentence. You got to check it out, goleft.tv. And Mike called me after the show to say that he's been on Hardball. He's been on Chris Matthews. He's been on MSNBC. He's been on CNN. He's done all kinds of media all over the country, and never have they gotten as many hits as they got from being on our program yesterday. That's kind of the good news. The bad news is they got so many hits from being on our program yesterday that it crashed their server, and they were down for 20 or 30 minutes. They thought they had a completely bulletproof system. They will today have a bulletproof system. So for those of you who tried to check out goleft.tv yesterday and got an error message, that's what happened. And it's kind of good news for our show, I suppose. It was, and good news for the folks over at goleft.tv. But anyhow, you can go check it out today if you missed an opportunity yesterday. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Amy in Eugene, Oregon, listening on KOPT. Hey, Amy.
Hello?
Hi, Amy. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Hi, Tom. I'm wondering about two things. One is that how can Congress go on vacation when there is a constitutional crisis brewing? There's no vacation on the streets of Iraq. And I'm just wondering if we can pose that question and ask people throughout the country to contact their congresspeople, their senators, and say, how can you take a vacation while subpoenas are being issued to the White House? They need to pursue this. They need to stay on top of it. And they need to not let these people kind of squeak by while everybody's vacationing. That's
a very good point, Amy, and I agree with you, but let's put this in context. In Iraq, the legislature actually went on vacation. And a lot of them, for the Iraqi legislators, who are the cream of the elite that's still left in Iraq, Iraq being the country with the second largest refugee crisis in the world behind Darfur, 2 million people have left the country, 2 million internally displaced refugees. Mm-hmm. The Iraqi legislators who are not showing up are, by and large, going to Amman, Jordan, and other nearby countries that will accept them, where they can, because they're wealthy people, where they can live in five-star hotels and take a vacation for a month. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the U.S. Congress goes on vacation, by and large, what's happening is that most of these members of Congress are not actually going to the beach and putting their feet up. Bernie Sanders is on a plane to Greenland along with 10 or 12 members, 11 other members of the United States Senate to be able to come back and cogently argue that global warming is real and we have a real international and global problem on our hands. You've got other members of Congress who are going to be going out in their districts. And I know Bernie will be in his district a lot. Every single day he's doing a different event. I see the same thing here in I know many of my members of Congress in this area. There are some who don't seem to show up for much, like David Wu, who represents the district right down the road from me. But Earl Blumenauer, for example, who represents most of downtown Portland, Peter DeFazio, Brian Baird, who represents Vancouver right across the river. These guys, when Congress is, quote, on vacation, end quote, are actually back in their districts, many of them having events literally every single day, 7 days a week. So,
I'm aware of that. My son's worked for Congressman DeFazio and has done town hall meetings with him, and I understand how hard these people work. But the work right now is in Washington and keeping the pressure on the White House and not letting these people relax at all, because they are not doing the people's work. The White House is doing the work of the corporations, and it needs to stop. And they have usurped the Justice Department so that no one even knows who can actually enforce these subpoenas without.
Yeah. No, Amy, I get it, and I agree with you that this is a terrible crisis. And if I was running Congress, I would not have called for a summer vacation. I wouldn't have done it. And I agree with you on that. But it's a done deal. But the point is that, I think that during this recess time, people should be contacting their members of Congress's local offices and saying, do you have any local events that I can show up to, that I can participate in, so my member of Congress can hear my voice? And if you have a member of Congress, if you have a congressman or woman, or if you have a senator who is not doing events in your state or in the district during the next couple of weeks while Congress is in recess, raise hell. I mean, that's what I would be doing. Ron in Kentucky. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I just going to mention that I heard Pete Hoekstra, House representative from Michigan, comment that he believes they should gut the FISA bill, the protection of FISA over,
sure,
eavesdropping and all that. He believes they should gut it. He also said that, our CIA wasn't doing, near the job it had to, and that there was tons of leaks in the CIA. And my question to him, and the reason I'm kind of calling is to tell people, these are how these neocons feel, and what about the eavesdropping on our president that did all them, hidden, what do you call them? Emails to the, through the Republican Party and stuff.
What about the 500,000 missing emails that are required by law to be kept? What's going on is that the Republicans are attacking the law and the institutions that are authorized by the law and that enforce the law, rather than attacking the lawbreakers, because the lawbreakers happen to be Republicans, and that's the bottom line, and that's where it's going, and we all should be doing something about it. Stacy in Los Angeles, got about a half a minute here before we got to wrap up this hour. What's up, Stacy?
Hey, Tom. I think Michael Moore, frankly, should just do what Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton did and not show up for his subpoena. But what I want to ask...
But see, he doesn't have the president behind him.
I understand. I was being sarcastic. But it would be interesting to see when all hell would break loose if he did that.
It wouldn't surprise me if he would. The publicity would be great.
And he is the master of that. Here's my question to you. Since the independent prosecutor statute has expired, what happens if the Democrats' letter to the Solicitor General, the Solicitor General just says, not going to do it, not going to appoint an independent prosecutor. Then what?
Well, the special prosecutor and the independent prosecutor and investigator are different things. The law for special prosecutors has expired, but the U.S. attorneys have the right to appoint an independent prosecutor anytime. But what's happened is that the Bush administration has said that they're not going to allow U.S. attorneys to do it. So we're all waiting to see what's going to happen here. And we'll probably find out in the next week or two. 57.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program here on Anything Goes Friday. Pat Tillman, by the way, the Associated Press yesterday. This is very, very troubling information. The Associated Press coming out with documents that indicate that Pat Tillman may have been murdered. I mean, this is the apparently the only conclusion that can be drawn from this. In fact, that's the headline over at Editor and Publisher, the publication for the news industry. Was Tillman murdered? AP gets new documents. Three bullet holes in the forehead in close proximity to each other. Army attorneys, this is some bullet points in this article in the Associated Press. Army attorneys sent each other congratulatory emails for keeping criminal investigators at bay as the Army conducted an internal friendly fire investigation that resulted in administrative or non-criminal punishments. The three-star general who kept the truth about Tillman's death from his family and the public told investigators some 70 times that he had a bad memory and couldn't recall details of his actions. Shades of Gonzo. And no evidence at all of enemy fire was found at the scene. No one was hit by enemy fire, nor was any government equipment struck. In other words, they were not in a firefight. So then the question becomes, if Pat Tillman was murdered, which is, by the way, is called fragging, and it is not entirely uncommon, particularly in times of combat. It's not a common thing by any means, but it is something that happens from time to time. Let's put it that way. If Pat Tillman was fragged, if he was killed by his own peers, why? There is some evidence. One of the people there testified that in his last words, Pat Tillman was giving another guy hell for not, putting his head up and going forward. So, you know, is it because Pat Tillman was not liked by his fellow guys because they thought he was a star or he was arrogant or something like that? Or was it because Pat Tillman had been talking about coming out against the war in Iraq, that he was all in favor of the war in Afghanistan, but he was, and in fact, I've seen stories that he was going to come back and have conversations with Noam Chomsky. You know, nobody in the mainstream media is going down this road. Nobody is talking about it. It is frankly startling to me how little coverage or speculation is there. I guarantee you, if it had been instead of Pat Tillman involving the war and potentially embarrassing the president, if it had been a question of, you know, some white kid who was kidnapped someplace, the media would be all over it. You know, okay, who murdered this kid? I mean, it's just, especially if it had been a 9-year-old beauty queen. I mean, the media would be all over it. But Pat Tillman, they seem to have a little concern about that. Also in Baghdad, the residents are receiving just an hour of electricity a day. And the Bush administration has now said that that information, how many hours of electricity a day people in Baghdad have, is no longer going to be shared with Congress or the American people. Amazing. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, Steve in L.A., California, Los Angeles. Hey, Steve, what's up? Steve, you're on the
Hello.
Air. Hey,
Tom?
Steve. Yes.
Oh, hi, how you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I'm great, too. I just had a grandchild yesterday.
Well, congratulations.
Anyway, what kind of bothers me is that we broke off from England as a colony, but yet, you look at today and look at all the powers that they gave the President of the United States. And I don't quite understand how that fits into the system of checks and balances.
It doesn't. And in fact, the powers that Bush has taken onto himself, and to some extent the powers that Nixon took onto himself, and the powers that Reagan took onto himself, are not powers that were contemplated, were considered by the founders. And you go back and read the Federalist Papers, even Hamilton, who was a conservative, and certainly Madison's writings, and they clearly did not expect the president to take on these kinds of powers. And that's why you've got conservatives out there like Bruce Feim and Paul Craig Roberts and even Bob Barr coming out and saying, wait a minute, this guy has gone way too far. This administration has gone way too far. This is not constitutional. This is not what the founders envisioned. This is not right. Frankly, Franklin Roosevelt took on too much power at times, although we were at war. I mean, this is the point that James Madison made, and as did Woodrow Wilson during World War I and arguably Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. And this is the point that James Madison made when he said, when the United States is at war, I'm paraphrasing here, you can find the actual quote in my book, We the People. There's a couple of pages about it, actually. Madison said, when a country is at war, more powers go to the president. I mean, that's just the nature of the Constitution, because he's commander-in-chief of the military, and therefore, we must be very, very, very careful about never going to war. Therefore, Congress, every 2 years, has to reevaluate the military appropriations to even determine if we're going to have a military. Every 2 years, they have to reappropriate, period, from scratch. So wars cannot be continued and cannot be perpetuated because they confer so much more power, so much more of an ability to spiff people and to provide emoluments is the phrase that Madison used, that he said no nation, no democracy can exist in a state of perpetual war. And yet what Bush has declared is a state of perpetual war, and he's declared that the United States, as well as the rest of the planet, is the battlefield. And therefore, we're no longer governed by the Constitution. We're governed by his definition of war powers. And it's just wrong. Steve, thanks for bringing it up and for making that point. Todd Tulsis here at KPOJ, at Clear Channel in Portland, dropped into the studio during the break and raised the point that Bernie hadn't quite completely answered the question about, you know, what kind of power how independent will an independent prosecutor be if he's appointed by the number two guy in the Justice Department, who himself is a political appointee and beholden to George W. Bush? And the frank answer is that none of us know yet. I mean, this is going to be very interesting to see. None of us know yet, because either this guy is going to push back and say, okay, I am going to appoint a special prosecutor who's going to investigate this thing. We are going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to investigate Gonzalez. Or he's going to say, no, I'm not going to prosecute the guy who is, at least in terms of chain of command, my boss. even though this guy is a direct political appointee by Bush, or who might end up investigating Bush, his Uber boss. He might just say, no, I'm not going to do it. And if so, then we have a serious disaster. Alan in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Alan.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Got a question. Okay, since our manufacturing base in this country is practically nothing now, suppose we had an emergency, some type of catastrophic disease going on in Asia, where most of our manufacturing has gone, and we can't import anything to this country. Is the Congress that short-sighted that they don't realize that we have no manufacturing abilities, or are less of a manufacturing ability to keep the country going? And isn't this
yes.
national security?
the simple answer to your question, yes. And the reason why is because these transnational and global corporations who have, basically think of themselves as worlds apart, as powers apart, separate from any independent nation, and certainly with no loyalty to this country or any other country, frankly, have lobbied and argued and promoted and pushed for that to be the case.
Yeah,
and
but we'll have no way of getting anything into this country if it happens.
That's
to be
right.
Like bird
and
flu or something, you know.
That's right. Or SARS. I mean, we almost saw this. And frankly, these big transnational corporations, as long as the profits keep flowing, they don't give a damn. It's what's best for the United States of America is at the bottom of their list. And all you have to do is look at their behavior to know it. It's an absolute screaming, flaming tragedy. It's a disaster. And you're absolutely right, Alan. And it's slave labor being used at the U.S. Embassy. I mean, it just goes on and on. For example, in today's Financial Times, and this is where it gets so very strange. I mean, it's just this from the Financial Times today. The U.S. needs to reduce corporate tax rates to prevent business profits from being squeezed by the rising cost of rising finance through debt and equities. Alan Greenspan warned yesterday. So you got Greenspan running around saying, the economy's going in the tank because of these bizarre trade policies and this bizarre conservative economics. The economy is going in the tank. So what do we have to do? Cut corporate taxes. Let's just eliminate them. Mr. Greenspan was speaking at a gathering of policymakers and business leaders to discuss cutting U.S. corporation tax and simplifying the tax code. Right. The meeting led by U.S. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, urged landmark reform of the business tax system on a par with changes made by former President Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, who cut it in half, who cut our taxes in half, and not our taxes, who cut in half the taxes of the millionaires, the billionaires, and the transnational and global corporations. It's just getting so weird out there, and it's why it's so important that we be taking this country back. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. AirAmerica.com if you want to participate in our blog today. Any topic you'd like. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls. The board is slammed. We'll be getting right back to you in just a second. TomHartman.com as well for our live chat room and our message board. 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Friday, Lyle in Charlottesville, Virginia, listening to WVAX. You are on the air, Lyle.
Hey, this issue of meat and global warming, I really appreciate you bringing it up. It's an important one.
I agree. I actually, one other thing in the study that I didn't mention is that what they found was that grass-fed beef doesn't have anything close to the impact on the environment that the corporate farmed, what do you call it, mass-produced beef does.
Industrial beef, you got it.
Yeah, industrial beef.
Good. That's my point. You got it.
Oh, okay. Great.
Local, organic, grass-fed beef. It's good for you. It's good for the farms. Go for it. Something is bad. Be careful.
Yeah, if you don't want to become a vegetarian, buy local, buy grass-fed. Good point, Lyle. Thanks a lot. Denise in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Denise.
Hello. This is Denise.
You're on the air.
Okay. This information came from Navy personnel that has the order on their desk. that starting in September, all sailors, after 6 months of duty on a ship, will go for 2 weeks of combat training and be sent to Iraq for a year on the ground.
Well, that's interesting. I think most people who joined the Navy did so thinking that they would never be on the ground in combat.
Well, starting in September, they're starting with the officers, and they will be, and that's all the information I have. But as many facets that run through my mind on this thing, it's like, if you can make a sailor combat ready, which you can't, in 2 weeks, how come we haven't been able to train the Iraqis in 5 years?
Well, actually, we have. We've trained them very effectively, and they're using that training and using those weapons to shoot at us. I mean, that's the bigger part of the story that nobody's talking about, is the fact that we are seeing, and they're blaming this on Iran, bizarrely enough. They're saying, well, Iran must be training these people because all of a sudden they're very sophisticated. They're using our same combat formations. They're using our same tactics against us. How bizarre. They must be learning that in Iran. No, I'm sorry. We've trained several hundred thousand of them, and then they use that against us. Denise, thanks for the call and for making the point. I hope to, you know, if you get more information on that or you get any documentary evidence about that, pass it along to me. My contact information is over on our website at tomhartman.com. Mary in San Diego, California, listening on KLSD. Hey, Mary.
Hi, Bill. I wanted to reinforce what the lady said about Congress not taking off. 2 weeks ago, I called Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Reid, plus my representatives and many of the other more active ones, and asked them to cut their vacation in half, work 2 weeks, and then take off 2 weeks. And I don't think that's going to be too big of a hardship. Maybe they could, the 2 weeks that they were working, they could take a long weekend, and that would give them a little more time with their constituents. There's too many important things going on right now for them to take off an entire month. And if they take off the two, if they work the 2 weeks, they might prevent Bush from making another recess appointment.
Well, apropos of that, Mary.
Pardon?
Apropos of that, the recess appointment, there was a suggestion that was made that came out of Reid's office, as I recall, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that he was going to bring Congress back into session for 1 hour or something like that, one day a week, every Friday afternoon for an hour, throughout the August recess, so that actually be a recess. And I don't know if he's going to do that. I mean, I never saw any follow-up to that.
Well,
I hope they do that, but I don't know that they're going to do it. I don't think so.
I would like to suggest that everyone that's listening to your program call all of the representatives, plus the speaker and majority leader, and anyone that they're familiar with in the House and the Senate, and ask them to not to take the entire 2 weeks. We need them there in Washington to do our job. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Mary. And the phone number for Congress, if you want to call your member of Congress, the House or the Senate. Simply, and if you're not sure who represents you, just give me your zip code, and they'll tell you who your state representative is. Every one of us, or who your U.S. member of the House is, every one of us has one member of the House of Representatives and two members of the Senate. Every state, unless you live in Washington, D.C., every state has two senators and one, and each congressional district has one member of Congress. And so you have three elected representatives in Congress together, the Senate and the House, that you can call, or who you can call. And the telephone number is 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. And we also keep that posted on our homepage over at tomhartman.com. Joe in Orinda, California. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, I wanted to talk about government continuity plans. I think this really will be gone for, is kind of an under-the-table kind of a thing, to something that's much more overt and disturbing. If you go back to Rex 84 Bravo in the early 90s when it came out, which was a FEMA martial law contingency plan, Oliver North was in charge of, and then, you know, which was kind of conspiratorial in terms of how people talked about it, but then when you look at what FEMA did in Katrina, you're seeing much more military operations. Then comes the Patriot Act. Then you have the Military Commissions Act, and then you have these two executive orders that Bush just signed, one putting him in charge of everything, and then the other, you know, enabling him to take away people's assets. And I'm just kind of wondering, I'm hoping to pose this question to Bernie Sanders, but I'm kind of curious as to how, you know, Congress thinks takes this seriously.
There are a number of members of Congress who do take it seriously and are very concerned about it, Joe. The problem is not enough Americans know what you were just talking about and what we talk about in this program regularly. And that is that the Republicans in the House and the Senate and the Bush administration have set this country up for a dictatorship in the event of a crisis. All the instruments are there, and we need to sound the alarm.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. By the way, I mentioned a Michael Moore DVD of Sicko and suggested people get it and show it, and I was wrong. There is no DVD of Sicko. Instead, and I was conflating that in my mind with some of the work that Robert Greenwald is doing, who had been on this program recently. Instead, go to the movie theater. Organize an expedition. And if the theaters near you are not showing Sicko, call them up and give them hell and get all your friends to do the same. Well, no, don't give them hell. Call them up and ask them to bring the movie to you, to your town, so that you can see it. Because that's the very best thing that we can do to support Michael Moore is have as many people as possible show up in movie theaters and see Sicko. We're going to get back to your calls in just a second. But first, I do want to check in on what's going on with the ongoing U.S. occupation of Iraq.
I want to know the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the balance. There are people on the fire. There are children at the camp. And there is blood on the wire.
Following our security developments in Iraq as of 1100 GMT Friday, the source Reuters News. Dateline Mumadia, two mortar bombs killed one woman and wounded two others, including a child in this town 30 kilometers south of Baghdad. In Kirkuk, two people were killed and another wounded in a rocket attack, which destroyed a house in southern Kirkuk. In Diyala, one American soldier died in a roadside bomb attack. In Kirkuk, insurgents killed one Iraqi soldier in a drive-by shooting at an army checkpoint, and six people were wounded by a roadside bomb. All the more the tragedy. 866-303-2270, our phone number. John in Lafayette, Colorado, listening on KKZN. Hey, John, what's up?
Well, Tom, all the impeachment talk, it seems to me like there's a reasonable way to go, and I probably don't understand things, and that's why it seems reasonable to me. But what seems reasonable to me is...
That's the case for many of us a lot of the time, John.
Yeah. Why could we not proceed with impeachment against Gonzalez? As I understand it, that would mean they could no longer claim executive privilege, and they could not pardon him or commute. Or, well, I guess they couldn't commute until he's convicted of something.
Well, an impeachment is only a conviction that results in the removal from office.
Right,
it's not anything that would require a pardon.
Right, but anyway, they can't avoid it. And it seems to me that if they started that way, they could do the investigation, find out what was really going on. And if it's nearly as bad as I suspect it is, then from there they can decide whether or not Bush or Cheney need to be pursued.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, Bruce Fein, who was on the show last week, the Republican or the conservative, he was a Republican. He was in the Reagan administration. He was assistant attorney general. He also drew up the articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton, was on this program last week calling for the impeachment of Bush and Cheney immediately. And he was on Hardball yesterday, and he said to Chris Matthews twice, maybe three times, the only solution to this is impeachment. Matthews never took the bait, wouldn't even discuss it. But he didn't say the impeachment of Bush and Cheney. And I think that therefore, perhaps Matthews was thinking that he was talking about the impeachment of Gonzalez. But you're right. The House of Representatives has the ability to impeach any federally appointed officer, including members of the judiciary. And all they have to do is determine that high crimes and misdemeanors have been committed or that, you know, treason against the United States. I think that they have every reason and every basis to impeach Gonzalez, particularly if the executive branch or if the Department of Justice says that they will not investigate Gonzalez. They absolutely should impeach him. And my guess is, frankly, that they will. Now, the one thing that we have to keep in mind, though, is that impeachment proceedings in the House of Representatives are no magic bullet. If the House of Representatives decides to impeach Gonzalez, the committee that is pursuing that impeachment has no more and no less authority to subpoena and compel testimony than the House Judiciary Committee does right this very minute in their investigations of Gonzalez. So it's not like all of a sudden they get some big new power when they decide to go to impeach somebody.
Well,
it's simply another investigation.
If it moves to the Senate for the actual, what you call
trial.
It, trial,
yeah.
then don't they have more power?
No. The Senate, in the case of in both the House and the Senate, impeachment proceedings do not confer to either the House or the Senate any extraordinary or unusual powers of subpoena or imprisonment or anything else beyond which they already have. Now, they already have considerable power. The power of inherent contempt, for example, which hasn't been used since the 1930s. The power to literally say for the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate to say to the Senate Majority Leader to say to the Capitol Police, who are under the control of Congress, not the executive branch, to say to them, go get this person and put them in that jail cell that's in the basement there underneath where the House of Representatives meets. They can do that. They, as I said, they haven't done it in 75 years, but they have the power to do that. But there is no extraordinary power that comes to them as a consequence of impeachment proceedings.
So they could still claim executive privilege.
That's right. And Stonewall.
The
odds are that would increase the probability of a conviction in the Senate, the actual impeachment. But that's not a criminal conviction. That's merely a removal from office. Now, that's a good thing to have happen because Gonzalez is acting as a firewall against anything getting all the way up to Bush. And removing that firewall, I think, frankly, would be a very good thing. But it's not a magic bullet. It's merely a part of a process.
Well, then why couldn't Nixon, for example, have claimed executive privilege in the face of all that was going on there? Didn't the courts deny that?
With regard to John Mitchell, actually, there's two pieces to this. Nixon allowed John Mitchell to be investigated by the Justice Department. This is the first administration in the history of the United States that has claimed that the president can prevent the Justice Department from investigating itself when ordered to do so by Congress. John Mitchell was investigated by the Justice Department, and he actually went to prison. He was the Attorney General.
Oh, yeah.
Now, on the other hand, Nixon did claim that the White House tapes were privileged because they included conversations that had to do with foreign policy and things that the Supreme Court had ruled fall under the realm of executive privilege. And in that unanimous ruling by the Supreme Court in the U.S. versus Nixon in 73, I think it was, the Supreme Court ruled that executive privilege does not cover crimes. And so if Congress is investigating a crime, as opposed to something that they just think was wrong, but an actual prosecutable crime, then the president cannot claim executive privilege. But there's a certain kind of catch-22 here. Congress, in that case, already had the testimony of John Dean. They already had some clear demonstration that Nixon had committed a crime other than just the tapes. And so they could use that other evidence that Nixon had committed a crime to demand that the tapes be provided as part of the criminal investigation. On the other hand, the Bush administration has, you could argue that they have committed crimes and that there's evidence out there, I think certainly with FISA, but by and large, they're taking the position that this doesn't have to do with that. This isn't about crimes. This is about the political process of impeachment. And impeachment is a political process, not using political in the nasty, dirty word derogatory context, but in the context of the founders. You know, the political system is used to heal and repair itself, to heal and repair a constitution.
In other words, it's not criminal.
That's correct. Okay. It is not a criminal process. It is a political process. And so, you know, there's really two things that need to go on here. Number one is that Gonzalez needs to be investigated on a criminal basis by the Justice Department. And if he is unwilling to allow the Justice Department to do that, then he needs to be impeached. And if Bush is unwilling to allow the Justice Department or direct the Justice Department to do that, then he should be impeached. And these might be the things that will push Congress to do that. So we'll see. John, thanks a lot for the call. Bob in Queens, New York. Hey, Bob.
Yes, on the same subject, John stole my thunder. But before I get on to Gonzalez, on the Nixon tapes, they actually had his voice discussing ordering the CIA, the FBI, and the IRS to investigate his opponents. And
right,
to,
which were covered in the second of the three articles of impeachment against him.
Right, and the even though portions of those tapes that they had Nixon's voice on would have been banned, you know, due to national security, you know, foreign policy discussions, those elements of Nixon ordering the CIA to smear his opponents would have been allowed in, I presume.
Yes.
On Gonzalez, I agree with John. The way to go is to impeach Gonzalez. You already have enough evidence and people who would be willing to testify who would not be claiming executive privilege, such as Mueller and other people. And what's that girl's name?
Sarah Taylor.
Yeah. Gonzalez
she's,
is the way
she's
to
coming
go.
Before the House again, I think, today, by the way.
Gonzalez is the way to go because with Nixon, I mean, with Bush, what you have, it's very difficult to get Bush out of office. You're not going to have the Republican votes, number one. Number two, they're going to politicize and say it's payback for Clinton. And number three, as Reagan did with Iran-Contra, Bush would have, like, plausible deniability. He's going to say, look, my attorneys told me that on the torture memo and on the illegal wiretap, my attorneys told me it was okay, so what are you blaming me for?
Right, and his attorney at the time was by and large Gonzo, was
right.
Roberto Gonzalez.
But
that's
the deniability these presidents get. They say, my attorneys advised me on this, so how can you say I committed a crime?
Right.
Now, the other thing...
Although that doesn't always entirely wash. I mean, a lot of mob guys have tried that also, and they ended up in jail.
One last quick thing. The Democratic Congress, after September, after Petraeus speaks, must defund the war.
I absolutely agree with you, Bob. Absolutely agree with you. And thank you very much for the call. We've got to take a break here. 45 minutes past the hour. And just say, they don't even need to defund the war. They just need to say, you're going to get no more money. The money you have right now is plenty to pull our troops out of Iraq. Begin the process today.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We can free fall. We can't let our Constitution free fall, I'll tell you. 9 minutes before the hour, Victoria Jones with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. TalkRadioNews.com, their extraordinary, useful, and fact and fun-filled website. Victoria, welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. I feel I did my duty for the country today in the White House press corps. Yeah, I feel I did, because... So there were a lot of questions being asked, 25 minutes worth of them, about Roberto Gonzalez and Robert Mueller and the extremely complicated issue of who was talking about which TSP and WhatsApp program and wireless tapping and warrantless issues and whatever, and who meant what and who was lying and who was telling the truth. And it was extremely complex. And frankly, the more I listened to it, the more confused I got, the more I thought to myself, if I wasn't following this day in and day out, if I was just sitting at home, I wouldn't know what they were talking about. So finally, I asked my questions, and my questions were the following. Can you assure us that Robert Mueller and Alberto Gonzalez were both telling the truth?
Oh, that's interesting.
I think that's isn't that the question?
Yeah, because their testimony contradicts each other, apparently. I mean, Mueller said waffle words, and then he ended each sentence with the word yes, which is pretty definitive. And the guy's a smart lawyer, and I don't think that was unintentional. So,
right.
Victoria, who did you ask this question of?
Tony Snow.
And how did he answer?
Well, he didn't fall into the trap of saying that he could assure me that they were telling the truth. As a matter of fact, he told me that he couldn't get into their heads.
Oh, that's a very interesting way to word
it. It was a very interesting answer to the question. He basically couldn't assure me that they were telling the truth, is what he said. And then I also asked him, well, are they talking about the same program or aren't they? That's the other basic question that all of America wants to know. I mean, this is pretty basic stuff. Is it the same program or is it a different program? That's what it comes down to. And he went back to, that he couldn't go any further than what he'd already said, which was basically waffle for 25 minutes. So I can't give you any more than waffle on that one, I'm afraid.
Yeah. So I guess the bottom line and the really simple way to boil all this down is that the question is, did the Attorney General, first of all, did the President and the Attorney General conspire to break the law in the United States and they were tried to stop, and John Ashcroft, did the President and the guy who was then his lawyer, Alberto Gonzalez, and Andrew Card, his chief of staff, did they conspire to break the laws of the United States and the Attorney General John Ashcroft and his assistant James Comey tried to stop them? And now, A, and B, now Alberto Gonzalez is lying to Congress about it. And see, if so, if not, then why is Robert Mueller and why is John Negroponte and why is the documentary record seem to suggest that that's the case? And another question that hasn't been asked is why isn't anybody calling John Ashcroft before Congress? But, Comey, I guess, was pretty good. And B, what is the Justice Department going to do with this this request from these four senators that they appoint a special prosecutor, a special investigator?
That I don't know the answer to. I don't know what they're going to do with that at this point. I mean, that's a procedural thing, and I don't understand that.
When are we going to find out? Do you have any sense of when we'll find out, Victoria?
I don't have any sense of that at all. We've heard nothing from the Justice Department about it. I mean, it rests with the Justice Department. I think we're in untrodden ground. I don't know where that falls. In answer to one of your other questions, what Tony Snow would say is that they are basically talking about different pieces of the same program at different points in time.
Mm-hmm.
And that would account for differences at all.
So what they're doing is they're saying, oh, this is interesting. Let's just try and make a metaphor out of this. It's sort of like you and I could be having a conversation about high school, for example, or college. Let's just say high school. And actually we're having a conversation about math class. And somebody says, were you having a conversation about high school? And we could say, no. We were having
a conversation
about a part of high school.
That's
and they
exactly
say, well,
right.
Were you having a conversation about English class? No, we weren't. Oh, okay. Well, I guess you weren't talking about high school and you weren't talking about English class. I guess you must have been talking about going to the zoo or something. Well, we were talking about something other than what you suggested. I mean, that's how they're weaseling around this thing.
That would seem to be it. And, in fact, David Gregory used that analogy. He said, well, we seem to be talking about a meal, and you're talking about whether you're talking about actual ingredients of a meal and whether we're talking about the meal or the ingredients of the meal.
Right, so we're all looking for metaphors here, or analogies.
Tony Snow said, well, I really don't have a metaphor to come back at you with.
Yeah, interesting. And what else is going on in Washington, D.C. today?
Absolutely.
And when is Congress breaking?
Congress is breaking pretty – I can't tell you, actually, to be honest with you. I think in about a week's time, the president goes away, I believe, on the 13th of August. That's when he'll join the Iraqi parliament at an undisclosed beach. And they've got all kinds of games planned, and so that'll be fun for all.
No doubt.
But there really was almost no other issue of interest today in the White House press corps. The only other thing that did come up was the economy.
Is there any possibility that Harry Reid will do what he suggested a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or more ago, of bringing Congress back into session every week for 1 hour so that Bush cannot use this time for recess appointments?
I think that is highly unlikely.
That's unfortunate.
I mean, that's just my guess, and it's based on nothing, but I just think it's highly unlikely that he's actually going to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Okay, well, as they say, we live in interesting times. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
And thanks for standing up to Tony Snow and asking him the tough questions. It's great having you there. 57 minutes past the hour. Back to your calls on Anything Goes Friday here. Tom Hartman with you. Also, I want to share with you how the American workforce is absolutely being screwed right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Debate going on in the chat room about whether or not we should be flying our flags upside down because the Constitution is in a crisis. I personally think not, because that's supposed to be the I'm in a crisis, come help me message. But I guess we all are. I don't know. But still. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. They are doing it. I make these jokes, right, about Dick Cheney.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Well, here it is. This over at Wired Magazine's blog, wired.com. The Department of Homeland Security is funding the creation of an LED flashlight that uses powerful flashes of light to temporarily blind, disorient, and incapacitate people. The headline, Homeland Security funds LED lightsaber. Homeland Security's science and technology arm hopes government agents can use the lightsaber to arrest people on planes and at borders without using traditional weapons. The LED incapacitator uses a range finder to measure the distance to a target's eyeballs and then unleashes continually changing multicolor light pulses that both blind and disorient the person. Intelligent Optical Systems, a small company in Torrance, California, is developing the weapon with money from Homeland Security's Science and Technology Division, which thinks it's possible to have the weapon deployed to cops, National Guard troops, and border agents by 2010. You know, in the old days, they used to just throw tear gas at us. Now they're going to blind people. And tear gas was no fun, let me tell you. Blackstone. How a Blackstone deal shook up a workforce. I promised this just before the break. You know, what the Bushies are doing, and not just what the corporatists are doing to destroy the middle class in America are piggies alert for the day.
£291 billion, Dr. Calculus.
Well, let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the
refuse.
Yeah, refuse, yes. Per every day. And by the year, let me figure, over 53 million tons of
manure?
Manure, yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every 4 and 3, you've got a pile of this
excrement.
Yeah.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed?
And it's the bigger piggies you have to worry about.
Bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
And they always have clean shirts. This from today's Wall Street Journal. In the trenches, how a Blackstone deal shook up a workforce. Not long after, by Ianth Jean Duggan. Not long after the Blackstone Group, by the way, this is the kind of reporting in the Wall Street Journal that I'm guessing when Rupert Murdoch buys this thing, you're not going to see anymore. Not long after the Blackstone Group bought Travelport Limited last August, workers at the company's office campus here, Centennial, Colorado, began feeling the squeeze. 2 months after the deal closed, scores of employees were lugging boxes of personal belongings to their cars, having lost their jobs. Under Blackstone's ownership, now keep in mind, Blackstone is one of these companies that basically goes in, buys out companies, uses debt to do it, very often dumps the debt on the balance sheet of the company that they buy, and then the company uses that debt to pay back Blackstone. So these guys walk away with a huge profit. It's not just Blackstone. I mean, this is just right across the board how it's done. These the financiers walk away with an enormous amount of profit, billions of dollars. And who gets screwed? Well, here's the story. 2 months after the deal closed, scores of employees under Blackstone's ownership, the real estate reservations conglomerate has laid off 841 people, about 10% of its workforce. Blackstone, a private equity firm, has already recouped all of the money it invested in Travelport. Similar scenes have been unfolding at companies across the nation. And they have a little graphic in here about the buyout binge and all these globally announced buyouts in billions. It was almost $800 billion last year. And so far, just in the first half of this year, it's almost $600 billion. Similar scenes have been unfolding at companies across the nation, a human toll of the corporate buyout boom. You'll recall, those of you who are old enough to remember, the last time we saw this was during the Reagan administration. Back to the Wall Street Journal. Private equity firms, which say they bring sorely needed financial discipline to poorly run companies, have been slashing costs and extracting profits at warp speed. As the cycle of buying and selling companies has intensified, life in the trenches can be unstable and traumatic. And then they go on to tell some of the stories. John Klegel, 41 years old, a computer systems analyst, and his twin Russell, a technical writer, were both laid off. They're selling the house they share because they can no longer afford it. Don Kleppinger, a 46-year-old software engineer with five sons, lost his job, leaving him without health insurance for several months. Grace Covio, 63, who lost her job as a telecommunications engineer, took a part-time job last month making sandwiches and coffee at King Super's grocery store. Michael Burson, 49, says it came as a shock. He lost his job as a data engineer in October, 3 months after receiving a, quote, superstar, end quote, award for saving the company $1.2 million on telecommunications costs. Mr. Burson has moved to Tulsa, where he's looking for a new job. Now, here's where it gets really and truly bizarre. To complete their $4.3 billion Travelport purchase, Blackstone and Technology Crossover Ventures in Palo Alto, California, a Palo Alto, California venture capital firm that now owns 11%, invested $1 billion. Now, this is a $4.3 billion purchase. They invested $1 billion and borrowed the rest. That debt landed on Travelport's balance sheet. In March, Travelport borrowed an additional $1.1 billion. Keep in mind, the original investors only put in a billion of their own money. In March, Travelport borrowed an additional $1.1 billion and paid it out as a dividend to the two firms, returning all of their money in just 7 months. So they get all their money back, plus they own the company now. Over the past 5 years, private equity firms have bought more than 10,000 companies. This year through June, 1,399 deals worth $582 billion have been announced. Some, I think, would probably describe this as, I describe it as the cancer stage of capitalism. Others might describe it as the parasitic stage of capitalism. It's an absolute, in my opinion, an absolute tragedy. Paul in Santa Ana, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Sounds like Blue Star Airlines right out of Wall Street, the movie.
Yeah, it does.
Tom, I may be overly conspiratorial here, but I'm a little concerned with this Michael Moore situation. Here's what I was thinking. I know Michael Moore put a film out of the country before the release when this first came up with the Treasury Department.
Right.
And he was concerned that they were going to make him pull certain footage out of it with the Guantanamo Bay. Is what his concerns, why he put the master copy out.
Right.
I was just thinking, your little faux pas about the DVD made me think, I was wondering if they intended to do that for the DVD release and the HBO release, which typically is about 6 months after the theatrical run. That would put it in the 2008 campaign season.
In other words, you think that the reason that the Justice Department is going after Michael Moore now is not to block theater distribution, and that's already a done deal, but to keep this movie from resurfacing in a big way on HBO or in DVDs during the election cycle. That might be harmful to Bush.
Exactly. And, you know, when when you see my much more people. Well, another two quick thoughts. How about a subpoena for Mrs. Ashcroft? She could tell us who was on the phone. That would be information that would be very useful, too. Also, she might have been room while confidential information security laws were broken. And one other thing on that recess for the Senate, that's very dangerous because that's how we got the Federal Reserve. They forgot to close out the Senate, and three senators took the floor, took a majority vote, and we ended up with the central bank back in, 1913.
Oh, that's interesting. So first of all, I don't think you're being overly conspiratorial with regard to Michael Moore. But you're suggesting that the idea that was floated of Harry Reid's of not ever going into actual recess, but, you know, keeping the thing alive so Bush can't do recess appointments is dangerous because what happened to the requirement for a quorum?
Well, that's it. They can do it with a majority floor vote. And it happened, like I say, that's how we ended up with the Federal Reserve. And it was attempted last August, again, for the tiered internet. If you remember our friend from Alaska, Mr. Tubes.
Mr. Ted Stevens.
He tried that exact same procedure with just three people.
Well, that's very interesting. That puts a twist on it that I hadn't considered. And you're right, Paul. It's and I do recall that. The monster of Jekyll Island and all that kind of stuff, how the Fed came about. Interesting. Paul, thank you very much. I got to tell you, we have the smartest listeners on earth on this program. I am so grateful to you for listening and participating. Back to your calls in just a minute. Anything goes Friday, 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
And we are getting to be mad as hell. I'll tell you, there is a groundswell in America. Many of us saying, enough! Enough! We were in Seattle a couple of weeks ago. A bunch of talk show hosts there on Talk 1090, they did a thing in Town Hall, and Mike Malloy had these T-shirts that just had the word enough printed on them. He walked out and said, just displayed it, and the crowd just right on their feet. That's, I think, the consensus in America. Enough! Already. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, airamerica.com, our blog, tomhartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room or participate in our message board. Unlike Bill O'Reilly's, all are welcome. And, yeah, there's some crazies in there. What can you say? Christine in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Christine. Welcome to the program. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to touch on something that's never been really spoken about very much, except you did touch on it ever so briefly a couple of months ago, and it's the whole Pat Tillman story that reminded me of this. And this has to do with, I know that everybody says we all know all the reasons that it was not necessary to go into Iraq, but I don't know that it was ever even necessary to go into Afghanistan, because I seem to recall, and you indicated that you did too, that didn't the Afghan authorities actually offer to hand us bin Laden if we put him on trial or just provided proof that he was responsible for 9/11, and for some reason that was turned down? Don't you recall hearing something like that?
Oh, I have the story. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I've been opposed, and I was opposed at the time, and I've been opposed from the very beginning, and I wrote about it at the time over at Common Dreams.
As have I.
To the invasion of Afghanistan.
Crazy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Christine. What the Taliban said was that if a third country, they would not hand bin Laden over to the United States.
Right.
But because they didn't think he could get a fair trial. But if a third country, And they implied, I mean, there was some weasel language in there, and you could think that maybe they were going to drag this thing out, but probably not. If a third country where they implied that it would have to be an Arab country, but if a third country where he could get a fair trial would take him, that they would hand him over and they would shut down his camp. And we did not need to rain bombs on the people of Afghanistan. We did not need to repeat the Soviet mistake of trying to conquer a land that, you know, all the way, that the Brits tried to do once back in the 1920s. I mean, you know, this goes way, way back. Nobody has ever successfully conquered Afghanistan, and we're not going to either.
So
and we shouldn't have gone there in the first place.
Not only could we have had him, or I mean, we could have had him at Tora Bora, but we could have had him prior to Tora Bora.
That's right. We could have had him a week after 9/11. We could have had him a week after 9/11.
I wonder if Pat Tillman started realizing this.
I think it's very possible, Christine, and thank you for the call. This is where it gets very, very bizarre. It's just a series of wars that we've been, frankly, in my opinion, lied into. Joe in Pittsburgh. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program. Listen to WPTT. What's up?
Thank you very much. I was going to talk to you about the difference between the Democrats and Republicans, and really there's nothing but a little bit of rhetoric, and they make a little bit of smoke, and everybody...
I strongly disagree.
Well, the facts speak differently, but I have one question.
What facts?
What facts? We're still in Iraq. The Democrats have done nothing about it. Bush is still pushing his policy, and everybody's going forward with it. All you hear is rhetoric about impeachment, and that's all it is. I mean,
actually, the Democrats have put through a rather substantial legislative agenda. We have more pieces of legislation blocked by Republicans in the U.S. Senate right now than in decades. I mean, it's mind-boggling what the Republicans are doing to try to block the Democrats from having any success, so that right-wingers can go on the radio and on television and say, "See, the Democrats aren't doing anything."
Well, that's exactly the way it is. It's all a bunch of rhetoric.
No, it's not. Politics does involve rhetoric, but it's not a whole bunch of rhetoric. It's a whole bunch of action by the Democrats that is being blocked by the Republicans, and being blocked intentionally by the Republicans so that they can get their shills to go on talk shows and say, see, the Democrats aren't doing anything.
No, Tom, listen. The American public is against the war in Iraq.
Yes.
By an overwhelming majority, it is staggering.
And the Democrats put forward legislation to end the war in Iraq, and the Republicans blocked it in the United States Senate.
Tom,
they had enough votes for passage, and the Republicans would not allow them to take a vote.
How come when it was the other way around and the Republicans were in control, the same excuses were used by the Democrats or the Republicans or whatever? We keep getting back to not what's good.
Actually, the same excuses weren't well, the Republicans were claiming, you know, for example, with Sam Alito, the Republicans were saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, if the Democrats are going to try and filibuster this, if they're going to say 60 votes in order to take a vote, then we're going to use the nuclear option. We're going to do away with the filibuster. And so the Democrats rolled over, tragically. And on that, I would agree with you that the Democratic Party has some substantial deficiencies. But they're not going to be corrected by us sitting around and saying there's no damn difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. They're going to be corrected by enough of us getting outraged enough that we start participating in the democratic process, and both small D and big D, participating in the Democratic Party and getting out there and getting active. We need to take back the Democratic Party. We need to make it the progressive party that it once was. That it historically was, going all the way back to its roots and its founding by Thomas Jefferson. And frankly, I think that, you know, conservatives of goodwill need to take back the Republican Party and turn it back into the party that it was under Teddy Roosevelt. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Anything goes Friday. Lois in Berkeley, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Lois, what's up?
Hi. Yeah.
I live in California, and it's so nice to hear PG&E is putting in a solar plant, and I really do feel good about solar energy, but I don't feel good about the fact that I don't think any solar collectors are made in this country, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of employment in the solar industry. They keep talking about how there's going to be all these good jobs, but somehow the jobs are already being outsourced.
I agree, and it's why we need to have not just, you know, a ramping up of a solar industry in the United States, but as Bernie Sanders has been calling for years, an end to these insane trade agreements that allow these jobs to go overseas. In Germany, for example, they passed laws in 1999 and 2000 that have led to about a third of all homes in Germany having solar collectors on their roofs and actually feeding power back into the grid. They've created so much solar electricity in Germany that they didn't need to build two nuclear power plants, which they were planning on building. And as a consequence of this, there was an enormous demand for solar panels in Germany in the early years of this decade. And most of it was coming from a giant solar panel factory in France. When the EU basically drank the Tom Friedman Kool-Aid and you know, went gung-ho for, quote, free trade, end quote, a Chinese company came in and bought up that French factory, labeled every square foot of it, dismantled it piece by piece, shipped it over to China, reassembled it, and now the Germans and the French are buying solar panels made in China. I mean, that's how, and they're, you know, Germany has more solar panels per person than any other country in the world right now. That's how bizarre it is. And so, Lois, my other concern, you know, you say, isn't it great PG&E is going solar? The other concern is that, yes, but, you know, you're going to find big utilities saying, yes, we're going to do solar installations, or yes, we're going to do wind installations, as long as we can concentrate it, as long as we can have a central distribution point so that we still have everybody by the neck. We have our hand around their throats, and we can determine what they get charged. What the last thing that most of these large utilities want is what really needs to happen, and what some of the voter-owned or community-owned utilities, the nonprofit utilities, the publicly owned utilities are doing, which is creating a lower level of distribution, a distributed network of power creation, a local power creation, rather than centralized power creation. That's the big problem. But Lois, you spot on identified it, and thank you so much. You did a great job. Emily in Manhattan. Hey, Emily, welcome to the program. Listen, and thanks
Hi,
for listening
Emily
to WWRL.
Manhattan.
Yep.
Hello.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. Since it's anything Friday, there's something that's been on my mind for quite some time, and it's called CAFTA.
The Central American Free Trade Agreement.
What? Yeah. But Jim Hightower, on his lowdown news sheet, came up with CAFTA, and it turns out to say a corporate plan to trounce the laws and the Constitution of this country. I've got it on my website. People would be shocked to know what there could happen to us, like a super power judge court that would...
Yeah, it already exists under NAFTA, by the way, under the North American Free Trade Agreement.
I know it's NAFTA, but as he opens up, he says CAFTA is worse than NAFTA.
You're right.
Because this Supreme Court outside of the United States, made up of large conglomerates, would have power to dissolve our, way of
our
government.
Laws. Yeah. If you, it even gets weirder than that. If you go to spp.gov, this is an official U.S. government website. The .gov domains are owned by the U.S. government. This is the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, which is the deal that was cut with George W. Bush and Vicente Fox of Mexico and Paul Martin of Canada, the respective presidents and prime ministers of those countries, to basically turn Mexico, Canada, and the United States from a corporate point of view into one giant country. When it comes to people, we're not one giant country. When it comes to people, there are walls and barriers and laws and things. And when it comes to workers, you know, the workers all get screwed. But when it comes to corporations, it's just one giant continent. And CAFTA will extend that all the way. Right. And CAFTA will extend that all the way down to Central America. And I agree with you, Emily, and thank you for pointing it out. It's well said. This is something that we should all be paying attention to. And check out spp.gov if you want to really curl your hair. And they're just like with the Project for New American Century, newamericancentury.org. I mean, back in 1998, they were on their website saying, we need to invade Iraq and we need a Pearl Harbor incident to provoke the invasion of Iraq. And, gee, they got it. And, I mean, it's not like, you know, people say, oh, it's a giant conspiracy what these guys are doing. Well, I suppose if you mean a bunch of people talking together, it's a conspiracy, but it's not a secret. It's not a secret at all. Marilyn in Los Angeles. Hey, Marilyn.
Hi, Tom. All right, I'm getting really nervous. I think one of the most important things anybody could do today is call Harry Reid and get him to keep convening the Senate, because a previous caller was talking about how Bush has done these, about Bush and the interim appointments. What if Alberto Gonzalez resigns for the good of the country while Congress is away and George Bush replaces him, and who in God's name would he replace him with? Could you think that one through for me?
Yeah, he'd toss Ted Olson in there, and for example, yeah, or some other loyal toady, and do it as a recess appointment. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. Why wouldn't he? Karl Rove is always ahead of us.
Yeah. You know, that's a very real possibility. On the other hand, the earlier caller who pointed out that if Harry Reid doesn't declare a recess, then a small number of senators can basically seize control of the Senate and pass legislation that we very much might not want, and particularly Republican senators. So it's a tough one. It's a really tough one, Marilyn, and we're going to have to learn more about this. I'm going to have to learn more about this and report back to you all on it. But
okay,
yeah, that's...
do it quick, Tom, because we're going down here.
You betcha, Marilyn. I will. I guarantee it. We will be talking about these issues Monday and Tuesday next week. Kim in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Kim.
Oh, hello, Tom. You know, I think I figured out the answer to my question, but I'm still going to pose it to you because I just saw the movie Gandhi. I mean, I thought I'd seen it when it came out, but I discovered I didn't, and I watched it, and it was the most inspiring movie about how this little man managed to bring the British Empire to its knees and get them out of their country. And I was thinking, well, golly, why can't the Iraqis do that? Why can't they take a chapter from Gandhi's book? But I figured it out because Halliburton's there. Halliburton's doing everything.
Yeah.
So
good point. Halliburton and Bechtel and other corporations. Absolutely. I've said for a long time that the Palestinians should have taken a page out of Gandhi. You know, it's nonviolent resistance, nonviolence. And certainly, I mean, you know, Martin Luther King, it worked very, very well for Martin Luther King. It worked well for Gandhi. It worked well for Jesus. I mean, you know, it created a movement that 2,000 years later is still around. The history of nonviolence is frankly, in my opinion, a more powerful history, a more compelling history, a more effective history than the history of violence, and more lasting, more, you know, and good point, Kim. Thank you very much for sharing it. You know, very, very well said. Eric in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Well, I just saw a documentary on Monday, heard a documentary on Monday on the BBC, and I'd like to tie it into some current events that are going on right now.
Are you talking about the documentary? This is quite a buzz in Europe about this, about how there was a coup attempt against Franklin Roosevelt that Smedley Butler, we actually did a couple of shows on this back 2-3 years ago on this program, and Smedley Butler, who wrote War is a Racket, was enlisted by some of the biggest industrialists in the United States, apparently including Prescott Bush,
indeed,
to do a violent or possibly nonviolent, but apparently a violent coup and overthrow Franklin Roosevelt and install a fascist dictatorship in the United States in the 1930s. And Butler blew the whistle on it and the thing came down. Is that what you're talking about?
That's definitely what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
and
the BBC did an hour-long documentary on this week, and it's got all of Europe buzzing, and it's not even mentioned in the United States.
Well, it's on BBC's website, Radio 4, and it's definitely 28 minutes long for the audio and wonderful to listen to.
We have been trying to contact the producer of that, by the way, to have him on as a guest on this program, and hopefully we will be able to do that in the next week or two.
Wonderful. It made me start thinking, though, about private military companies and how it might be easier today to get a private army to do what you wanted it to if you, say, were a rich industrialist wanting to take over. And it made me think about how weak our National Guard is here in the States and how Blackwater was definitely sent down to New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina when everybody's guns were taken away. And it definitely made me start thinking about Michael Chertoff's gut feeling, whatever that might be, and the different FEMA camps that are being built here and there and everywhere. And so I started worrying that perhaps it would be much easier just to say, hire a lot of soldiers that already existed in this country, perhaps mercenaries from Latin America existing in this country, and just kind of strong-arm the government today, you know, should we ever try to take our democracy and actually supplant open fascism here today?
Yeah. Well, you know, I really think that there is a red line that if these guys try to step over, there's going to be so much blowback. Although, you know, increasingly, Eric, I'm inclined to agree with your concern, because I thought that, frankly, that red line, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when I first wrote that piece, When Democracy Failed, drawing the parallels between the Bush administration right after 9/11 and today, and the German and the rise of Hitler, you know, I thought that many of the things that have happened, if they did happen, would cause the country to rise up or the Democrats to come crashing down on top of the Republicans and put an end to it. And neither has happened. I am very concerned. On the other hand, I still think that there's some red line out there that they will not be able to cross. We won't let them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
A special thanks to my producers, David Poole, Louise Hartman, to the folks at Air America who make all this stuff happen, Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner, who are right on the front lines here with this show every single day, doing a marvelous job in New York City, and the folks here at Clear Channel, KPOJ in Portland, who are providing us with studio space, to Sue Nethercutt, who's running our chat room. God bless you, Sue. It's a thankless task. And Ben Birch over at White Rose Society. To our advertisers, the radio stations carrying our show, and in particular to you for listening. Thank you so much. We have with us in the studio, right at this very moment, one of the real progressive leaders out there, one of the people really out front of all of it, and has been for a long, long time in the blogosphere, in the media, well, not the internet, Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash.com. Mark, welcome.
Good morning. It's great to be here in Portland. What a beautiful city.
Yeah, it is. And it's great to have you here, Mark. And I'm looking forward to sharing some time with you, you know, as the day goes on. What are the hottest stories? What are the biggest issues going on over at BuzzFlash? You guys so much have your pulse, your finger on the pulse of what's going on.
Well, I think listening to your program this morning, certainly the Gonzales incident is really the cusp of something very important. What you've covered this morning and the whole week is basically a 20-year strategy by the extreme right wing to control the American government by checkmating democracy. And by that, controlling, of course, the federal court system, controlling the executive branch, and controlling the Department of Justice. Those who think that Gonzales might resign, I think, are wishing upon a star, because he knows too much, and he's the chess piece that's used to block disclosure of Bush wrongdoings.
Yeah, he's the rook that's out there, or the knight, or whatever. Interesting. You want to take a couple of questions and a couple of callers? And
I just wanted to say one thing that came to mind in addition to this chess strategy, which the right wing has adopted, and at this point we do have checkmate unless Congress, as you mentioned this morning, goes ahead with impeachment, is that many of these people who might testify, remember, we could always have someone breaking the logjam, as you mentioned John Dean did in the Nixon case. But much like when I recently rewatched The Godfather, the Bush and Cheney administration role, like the mob, out of a combination of loyalty and fear. You've got these people who are loyal to the Bush administration, like Harriet Myers and Alberto Gonzalez. But you have to remember on the other side of that, that also many of them, perhaps Sarah Taylor, they also must be in dreaded fear that if they do talk, they're going to end up with what happened to Paul O'Neill, DeLulio, and of course, Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame, just to mention a few, which is to say, Like the mob, the Bush and Cheney administration basically have a philosophy: you hit us, we're going to hit you back twice as hard.
Yeah, yeah, and they do, and they absolutely do, and they go after your family,
as we saw with Roe's infamous comment that Valerie Plame is fair game. What she had to do with this is immaterial to what really Joe Wilson said, and he was accurate in what he said.
Yeah.
But they say, we'll take out your wife, we'll take out your children. It doesn't matter. You cross us, you tell the truth about us, you make a deal with Congress, and you testify candidly and honestly, we'll make sure that your life is ruined.
And I would submit to you, Mark Carlin, BuzzFlash.com, I would submit to you that it is not just the Bush administration, it's the Republican Party. The entire party, by and large, is being run this way.
They're enforcers. They're hitmen.
I mean, look at what happened to I think it was Cunningham, the Michigan congressman, who didn't want to vote for the Medicare drug benefit, and they came along and told him that if he did, he'd get $100,000 for his son to run for his seat because he was retiring, and if he didn't, he'd be destroyed. And he outed them, and they destroyed him.
Well, Kevin Phillips, when we interviewed him, and of course your listeners are well aware of him, he was an advisor, a key advisor to Nixon, but now finds the Bush administration to be extremely radical. But he says the Bush family really best works on the model of an organized crime family, and that's from someone who was an advisor to Nixon.
Well, not just an advisor to Nixon. Kevin Phillips wrote the book called The Coming Republican Revolution. He was there at the inception of it in 1967.
That is true. He is one of the key people who helped conceive what has happened today, only he didn't see it playing out that way. He still believed in democracy.
Right. He saw kind of a Goldwater conservative thing. Let's bring in a couple of callers here. Leslie in River Edge, New Jersey, listening on WWR. Leslie, you're on the air.
My wife and I love you. Listen, I have a question. I thought when the Supreme Court put Bush in, couldn't the decider at that time, Bill Clinton, couldn't he have said the Supreme Court exceeded their authority, and that he's going to give them a chance to reverse themselves or surround the court with the military and give them time without food and water?
No, I don't believe so. As a result of Marbury versus Madison in 1803, this flipped out Thomas Jefferson. In fact, he wrote a long letter to Madison about it, which I quote in my book Unequal Protection. He said that when in this 1803 decision, the Supreme Court decided, actually John Marshall, who was the Nixon's cousin who he hated, who John Adams had slid in there at the last minute just to basically, you know, flip off Jefferson. Adams did it on the way out. John Marshall, in this 1803 case, said that the Supreme Court was the final authority and could decide whether laws passed by Congress were constitutional or not. It's not in the Constitution that the Supreme Court has that power. And Jefferson said, if this is the case, if this is allowed to stand, then our Constitution is a legal suicide, and it has become a thing of wax in the hands of the courts. And turns out he was right. Mark Carlin with us, BuzzFlash.com. Mark, great having you here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Shaking it up with conservative Richard Viguerie on Monday. Michael Panzer here. Is there a financial Armageddon coming? Radley Balko about SWAT teams breaking down 800 doors a week in the United States. Terry O'Sullivan on labor issues. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.